In July this year, the world celebrated the 50th anniversary of the landing of the first man on the moon. Australia played a key role in beaming back images from Apollo 11 as Neil Armstrong took his historic first steps on the moon. But just 10 years later, Australia was back making international headlines as NASA's Skylab space station unexpectedly crashed to Earth in the winter of 1979. News of Skylab's impending crash sparked fear across the globe before it finally broke up over southwestern Australia. So what happened? And what's Skylab's perhaps ironic connection to the Miss Universe pageant? Here to tell us is Dave Renicky from the Mid-North Coast Astronomy and Science Centre in New South Wales. Dave, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Yeah, good evening, Philip. Good to be here with you.
Yeah, great to have you with us. What was Skylab anyway? What was it designed and put into space for?
America's first space station, Philip, basically put into orbit for one thing, designed to try and act as a workshop, if you will, an orbiting workshop for research into the effects of weightlessness on the human body. We wanted to know how the physiology of the body reacted to weightless condition, what we needed to know, what we needed to be prepared for, and generally a working laboratory, I think, the best way to describe it.
Mm. So astronauts would go up there and stay there and their effects of weightlessness would be studied. When was it launched?
It was launched on July 11, 1979, roughly. They wanted 8 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got a good 9 years out of it. But it does show one thing that does ring true, Philip, and that's Chicken Little was right.
What's that?
The sky is falling.
Yes, well, exactly. Who was on board it? There were different teams over the number of years. Well,
yeah, they rotated their crews. I believe there were three at each time that went up there. Their data was being recorded. They were being probed and prodded and watched and looked at. We know, or we assumed at the time, and these are only early days of spaceflight, that the bone density changes. You lose calcium at the rate of 3% every month that you're in orbit there.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that the blood changed a little bit as well, and the muscles deteriorated, Philip, as well. The human body does not react all that well to being in free fall, in a weightless condition. So for an intended journey to Mars, which is around 7 or 8 months,
mm-hmm.
we realised that we needed to do something pretty important there to try and find out drugs or work out ways to redress the situation. And luckily we have now, because on the orbiting space station that's there at the moment, there are treadmills, exercises, routines they have to go through. But Skylab was one of a kind. It was actually the first working laboratory.
It was. It was bigger than you think, wasn't it? It was about the size of a three-story house, wasn't it?
It was pretty big. Yeah, about 7 metres in diameter, Philip, about 25 metres long.
Right.
Pretty big, a little cosy inside, but still...
It was built in stages, was it? Or was it launched in one go?
No. Yeah, in one bit by bit. Of course, powered by sunlight with solar panels on it, and the rest is history. It put Bunbury on the map, I know that much.
Mm. They collected all kinds of data during the period, but 5 years after it was abandoned in late 1978, NASA realised that Skylab was going to break up and would re-enter Earth's atmosphere. But what was the problem with that? Because this happens with other bits of space rocket. What was the problem with Skylab?
We weren't good at that time in this type of thing. It was only fairly new. I mean, this is a few years before the shuttle even flew. As best you can determine by the technology of the time, Philip, they had a basic idea, a rough idea where it may land. They could only give you a covered area of a certain place, about 7,000 kilometres across the Indian Ocean. Somewhere in that stretch there, it may crash. But the problem we had with Skylab was something quite unusual. There were a lot of solar activity at the time. Now, when you get a lot of solar activity, you get solar flares. Now, solar flares can break free from the sun.
Mm.
When they hit the Earth, they can expand the Earth's atmosphere and actually heat it up. And this was the main thing with Skylab. A little bit too much criticism on NASA's towards NASA, I think. It wasn't their fault. They had a pretty good idea where it may come down. And that idea was that it more than likely would hit the ocean. And it probably would have, had not the solar flare, the extrasolar activity occurred. That raised the atmosphere higher, and that caused more drag on the space station, Philip. And I think that's the reason it came down unexpectedly or quicker than they thought it would.
It was a kind of design flaw, though, really, wasn't it? That they really hadn't spent as much time, money and effort as they should have. They spent a lot of time building it up there, but they didn't really spend the correct amount of time thinking, yes, but how are we going to get it down again?
Look, these are early days. You can't really go back. And I don't counter-criticise the space program because everything's new. This was a new area. We'd never done this before. We'd never been in space before. We needed answers. No, I wouldn't call it a design flaw. I think it was just one of those fluky things that that nature provided an obstacle that nobody could even foresee. And as I said, that was a solar flare. I think it would have come down over the ocean, as I said earlier too. But of course it didn't. The rest is history. We're lucky that nobody was killed from this because...
Yeah, well, let's get to that in a moment because I just want to stay with it up in the air for there for a moment because so the original plan was that it would simply come down, burn up in the Earth's atmosphere, and the remnant bits would fall into the ocean.
Yeah.
And they planned what to fall into the Southern Ocean, did they? Or
look, there's an area off Australia that we call the Space Graveyard. Hmm. It's a place there where there's a lot of water there. It's a big target, Philip. And that's where a lot of the debris from space, satellites that don't work anymore, boosters, that's where most of them are aimed to fall. And if you were to take a dive under there, you'd find a whole bunch of stuff.
This is off the coast of Western Australia, is it? Down in the Southern Ocean,
yes.
Isn't it?
Very, very, very far from us. I mean, it's not close enough to be any problem, but it is a place where these things usually... We haven't had any major dramas with anything hitting anybody. I mean, Skylab was just one of those quirky events, but certainly put Bunbury on them, or Western Australia on the map.
There was some plan, wasn't there, that they would they would try and stop it crashing to Earth at one stage. There was a plan to rehabilitate the Skylab in the sky and perhaps boost it into a higher orbit so that it would just circle the Earth forever. What happened to that plan?
I wasn't aware of that. I think they were too confident, maybe overconfident, that they could deorbit the vehicle quite safely in the ocean. And as I said, this tangential problem with the sun, the one they didn't expect, came into it. We couldn't do it with the space shuttle because the shuttle didn't fly till 1981. This came down in 1979, so there's no real way of going up there to push it out of the way, if you will. Mm. Philip, to be honest with you, I'm not aware of any contingency plan to do that. I'm sorry. Mm.
When a craft of this kind re-enters the atmosphere of the Earth, we've all seen this in space movies, the heat of the atmosphere breaks up the structure and burns it, and the debris scatters. Mm. Now, they might have mapped out a potential debris zone across the Indian Ocean and Australia, as we said, and the Southern Indian Ocean, the Great Southern Ocean, but when news got out that Skylab... maybe it could land anywhere. There was a bit of panic in around the world, wasn't there? I mean, many people in the US took a different attitude. There were Skylab parties, T-shirts sold with targets printed on the front. Cans of Skylab repellent.
In St. Louis, Missouri, the Skylab Watchers and Gourmet Diner Society formed, and they announced plans to view Skylab during a garden party, which they had hard hats for protective headgear. I know in North Carolina there's a hotel there designated the official Skylab crash zone, complete with painted target, and they were holding a poolside disco party. Look, entrepreneurs across the United States sold T-shirts with large bullseyes on them. I know of another one, an enterprising individual who took... and sold cans of Skylab repellent, Philip.
It wasn't such a laughing matter in many parts of Europe and Asia, though, were there? But, I mean, were worried about it. I mean, a Soviet satellite had crashed in Canada in 1978 and scattered enriched uranium across a big swathe of grassland. There were suggestions that might happen. In England, Holiday Makers in Devon were going to sit out in caves? Just
yeah, in old caves, yeah, they did. Well, one Aussie guy did profit from it, though. I mean, some of them, when the bits did come down, finally did land in Western Australia, they certainly caused a scavenger hunt on a scale we've never seen before.
It wasn't so stupid that someone could get hit. I mean, NASA did give odds on what the chances were in terms of someone being hit, and they weren't that remote, were they?
No, they weren't, no. And this is the time when everyone held their collective breaths and, you know, hoped that it wouldn't hit.
What were the odds?
I don't know.
I think I've got a memory of them being something like 1 in 150.
It's not good.
No, exactly.
No, I don't know, because nobody's ever been hit or killed by anything like this before. I mean, I only know one or two incidents where a meteorite has maybe tapped somebody on the shoulder or fallen down like that. In fact, I've just come back from Victoria celebrating the Murchison meteorite fall. That was 50 years ago. It was a huge meteor that broke overhead, and little bits and pieces were found around the town. But, this was a great time, but there were people that did pick quite a few of these up. I'm sure today that there'd be quite a few mantelpieces in Western Australia, Philip, that have little bits of them on there.
Yeah, probably. They did come up, but the NASA eventually came up with a date, though, for re-entry. It was July the 11th. Mm. And on that day, in the early hours of July the 12th, the whole thing came down on WA's southeast coast, scattering debris right across the Nullarbor and the eastern goldfields. I mean, people heard a sonic boom and there were bright lights. It caused a sensation, didn't it?
Yeah, well, this is a lot of material coming back there. When you have something like this deorbit, when it comes back through the atmosphere, it's moving at a pretty high rate of speed. Most of them come back about 20,000 k an hour. And like meteors, they get hot, they burn up, and they start to break up. Skylab, not being as solid as what you may assume, majority of it would have burned up, and it did. But there were still some heavy pieces like the hatch door and things like that would have survived that re-entry, the heat of re-entry that would have hit the ground. But it did fragment. There were quite a few pieces that were scattered everywhere, and like I say, everybody just went out and tried to find them.
The San Francisco Examiner in the United States had offered a $10,000 cash prize to the first person to deliver a piece of Skylab debris to its office within 72 hours of the crash. Well, you know what? A 17-year-old kid from Esperance in WA called Stan Thornton collected the prize, didn't he?
He did. He did, right.
He jumped on a plane. He hopped on a plane, yeah.
Yeah, he got over there, and they pay the money, of course. But look, the funny thing about this little tagline of this that I quite like, the mayor of Esperance sent NASA a bill for $400 for littering. Now, that ticket was issued in good fun. NASA didn't pay the $400 fine, but in 2009, that's 30 years later, a California DJ asked listeners to donate money so they could finally clear the books, and they did. They cobbled together $400 and sent it off to the Shire for his efforts. It's just a bit of fun. It was all done tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. I mean, there are still parts of the... there are bits of it around, as you say. It must be on mantelpieces everywhere. Parts of the wreckage were put on display during the Miss Universe competition in Perth in July 1979, weren't they?
Yeah, well, in South Australia, there's quite a few museums over there with bits of Skylab there. There's one with Skylab in red letters written on it, and there's another piece that's got little airlock-danger on it as well.
That'd be a terrific piece to find, yeah.
Oh, I'd love to have that on my mantelpiece. The Esperance Australian Museum has got two chunks of Skylab there, bits of the oxygen tank that came down, and a smaller one was found on a ranch in 1990, or by a rancher, as we call it.
Is there a market for this kind of thing today?
Oh, you bet. Yeah, of course there is. Yeah, for sure. In where I've just come back from Murchison, you know, there were people over there showing me little bits and pieces that they'd collected themselves. Look, because of its uniqueness, because of the history of Skylab, because of the interest it created right around the world, if you could prove that you do have a piece of Skylab there, you'd certainly be able to put it up for a pretty penny. How much? Well, that depends on whoever wants to buy it and what they're prepared to pay for it. NASA officially own that stuff. I mean, it's not something you could say that I own, but they did turn a blind eye to that, and they, at the time, anyone picking up little bits and pieces, they didn't enforce any ownership of that. But I do believe today that there is a little bit of a change in policy there.
Dave Reneke has been my guest. We've been talking about the day Skylab crashed to Earth in Western Australia over Esperance and caused a local and international sensation to a wonderful part of our history. Dave, good to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.